Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 79, coming at you right now. This one is entitled, What If He Doesn't Survive? Awesome, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast, a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and you can find us on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. That is me, The Brant. I am tweeting on the Twitter there, and I am your host for this episode number 79. I entitled it, What If He Doesn't Survive? Boy, I've had a rough stretch run. I've been sick. I've been worn down by all sorts of things. I've been super busy just hopping from here to there to there to there, doing a ton of stuff. I've actually been playing a lot of games. I'm playing a lot with Kathy, my wife, but I did get a couple other things in. So we are going to talk about the New York Toy Fair that I went down to for a day. Kathy came with me. We're also going to talk about Conclave that I got to go to for a day, a local convention in Connecticut. So all that's on tap. Hey, it's good to talk to you again. I know we've had a little bit of a hiatus. I recorded an episode and then it was just tough. A lot of crazy things going on and whatnot. So got that one out. Soon I will get another episode out for you here. This one, and should quickly record one with Brian. We'll be back in business before you know it. All right. So a couple of announcements and other things. First off, Silk City Board Game Group in March will be March 17th. That's St. Patrick's Day. Top of the morning to ya. So they're going to have Geek Fever Games there, running, demoing, teaching a bunch of their games and whatnot. So that'll be really neat. Want to check that out. I taught Dinosaur Island last month 4 times in one day, although I guess it was kind of cheating. I taught it twice to 2 groups. So maybe I only taught it twice. Either way, there was a lot of people I was answering questions for, but it was fun. So check that out. As always, that's at the Manchester Public Library from noon to 4:30 on March 17th. International Tabletop Day is going to be big. It's going to be really big. You definitely want to check it out. This is like one of the best days at the store. So we are open all 24 hours on Saturday, April 28th. So try to always clarify for people. This means Friday, it ticks over to midnight. The store is open. In fact, the store is open from Magic Draft. So if you really need to play longer, or you know you can't play late Saturday and you want to go through the night, you can come Friday night and start playing. There'll be people there. I will not. I cheat ever so slightly. I get in a good night's sleep, go to bed 6 or 7 o'clock, wake up about midnight, maybe 1, and get up to the store somewhere between 1 and 2. So I don't do 24 hours, I admit. But then I'm there all the way through. So anyway, so we are open there Friday night right into midnight Saturday, all the way through Saturday, boom, closing at midnight on Sunday or Saturday night, whichever way you want to look at that. It's going to be really exciting. Have a bunch of people that I think are going to be stopping by. So that should be exciting. There will be events. There will be think promos and other things. Brian is much better on the front of knowing the exact details. And we are also 8 weeks away from that. So we've got a little time, but I want to let you know that should be an exciting day. Definitely an awesome day. You know, I know a lot of people listen that aren't within daily driving distance of the store, but if you're within a weekend travel of the store, I think it's a great day to just come down and check out the Portal and the Time Machine across the street, which just got a shout out on Dice Tower podcast. That was awesome. They were talking about the Portal, but it was actually the Time Machine across the street where they have all the trains and everything. And you could check that out there as well. So yeah, consider it. There's great hotels right in the Manchester area, minutes away from the store. So you could make a weekend of it. Play 24 hours or whatever. If you want to sleep in on Saturday morning, get your coffee and your Joe. There's always the people that show up at 7 a.m. like, I woke up extra early to get here for 8 a.m. We're like, hey, we've been going for 8 hours. So I guess I'm lying because I've only been going for 6 or 7 by then. But always a huge day at the store. So definitely love to have you there checking it out. Cool. Let's get into what I've been playing lately. So I have played a lot of games. I'm going to try to work backward to forward. Man, got to give mad props to this this app here. You know, BGG stats. Just so good, so easy for me to just remember what I played. So, first off, Tyrants of the Underdark. So, Tyrants of the Underdark is a deck-building area control game. And if you know me, area control is one of those things that you're like, uh-oh, area control, Brent may not like it. But I really do wax and wane on this area control thing. So, Tyrants of the Underdark is D&D themed. This is from Gale Force 9. Yeah, it's a deck builder, and then there's area control on the board. So you play cards, and you either gain money or influence to buy new cards from the market, kind of Ascension style, or those other ones, Clank, whatever puts them out there, and you could buy them. Or you could play them for power to be able to place pieces on the board. And if you have enough power, you can actually eliminate other people's pieces or replace them with your own. And you're trying to gain control of territories that will give you points at the end of the game. And there's some territories that will give you additional influence or victory points at the end of each turn if you hold them. So that's the idea of what's going on. Really, really like this game. Definitely view this as an underrated game. It has a decently high price point. It's like $70. And I can see people backing off there. But I mean, honestly, Clank is $60. This is $10 more in terms of that. And I totally get the appeal of Clank, and I think at the end of the day, I probably would play Clank more often, but I really like Tyrants of the Underdark. I think if you enjoy Clank, it's definitely the next place to go. These board games that include deck building are really exciting, and I wouldn't say this is like an unknown game. People definitely know about it, they've heard of it, but I feel like with the popularity of Clank, this one got kind of swept underneath, and it's really, really good. At the start of the game, you take two, there's four decks in the box, you take two of them, shuffle them together, that's your decks. So you've got some variability every time you play, and I believe they released two more expansions that either have a single deck or a double deck, so there may be like as much as eight decks that you can shuffle together and play with. And they're not super different, but they're different enough to change up the game. You've got different mechanisms, different keywords, and things like that. The deck building is really, really good. It's what you really want in a deck builder. So, why do I say that? Okay, so first off, there are cards that are definitely worse than others, but no card is inherently so bad you can't handle it. You know, one influence is not so good, but I can work with one influence. One power always lets me put a piece out on the board until the board fills up, then it gets a little crazy. But, you know, hey, if you haven't gotten rid of those cards by then. It also offers you a lot of opportunity to get rid of cards. So the way that they get rid of cards in this game is promotion. So when you promote a card, you not only take it out of your deck, you put it on your little promotion tile, and every card has an inherent value. So the starting ones are worth zero in your deck, but if they're promoted, they're worth one. Love that. Why do I love that? Because now I really want to get rid of cards, right? I want to get them out of my deck to make my deck more efficient, and I get points for them. Also, you get to tough decisions in the mid-game. The end-game, it's easy to say, oh, this card that's worth one in my deck or four out of my deck, boom, get rid of it. I may not see it again. But mid-game, when you're like, ah, this is worth two in my deck, five out of my deck, but it's a really good power. What should I do? So that deck building is really, really good. Don't mind the market. There's enough options there. There's also basic cards you can buy that give you two power or two influence, and those are pretty good. Those are worth buying. So I like that. Unlike like in Legendary, when you can buy that like that one that just gives you influence or money to buy others, I just feel like I never want to buy that one. There's always something better. But here it's like, oh, those are okay. I would buy those. There's probably something better on the board, but when there isn't and I really need power, boom, I'm going to buy that one. So Ascension's kind of that way. The extras that are there are usually worth buying. So the deck building's really good. All right, area control on the board. I'm totally fine with this area control. It really makes sense. It's like, okay, I'm going to own this whole zone. You have to have three power to remove me, then a fourth to put one there, and blah, 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 keep going from there. Obviously, there's going to be cards that are going to say remove two and replace, but it's very turn. Like, I see you coming at me. I understand you're going for me. You want to control a whole zone, so there's control and total control, and total control is going to give you bonus points at the end of the game, whereas control just gives you the regular points, and total control of certain areas gives you the victory points. So it's telling me this is the maximum to place there, and there's a reason to do it. So that makes much more sense to me than games like El Grande, where it's like, well, I'm up by three. Do I need to go up by five? Are they going to have some sweeping mechanism that's going to take me out? And is it worth it to them? Darn it, it was. I didn't add pieces. Or, oh, now I'm up by five, and they have no interest in going there, so I've wasted my turn. that inherent, like, I don't know. I love when there's a cap to area control. This is as far as you can go. Twilight Struggle does a great job with this because, like, it inherently costs more to increase. Or, oh no, you make your opponent pay more. But, you know, it makes more sense and it's very head-to-head. Anyway, so I don't really have a major problem. The cards that come out, the combos that work, the deck shuffling, the who am I going after, the who's in the lead, because it's one of those games you don't know how many points people have, so there can be a perception of somebody in the lead, can be a little bit tricky. It's going to favor people that play more often. So Clank is going to be that, like, quote-unquote friendlier game. It's better theme. It's more interesting. It moves quicker. You know, somebody may wipe the floor with people, but whatever. You know, you have a lot of fun doing other things. This might not have as much of that, but it's a really solid game. So like I said, if you like Clank, you've played Clank, Clank in Space, move up. Try Tyrants of the Underdark. I think, I don't even know if it's as much of a move up as a lateral move, but it's definitely a change in thought process. So a little less fun, I guess, and a little more enjoyment in, like, cleverness and deck building, which I think is good. You know, I want to have fun. I'm still having fun. It's just I also get that clever piece that you don't get as much of in Clank. So that is Tyrants of the Underdark. All right, so people were debating lately Azul Sagrada. Sagrada, Azul. These two games, hadn't played either. So Jen Bartlett, board game librarian, let me borrow both of these. And Kathy and I played both, one after the other. So Sagrada is a dice-rolling, build-a-stained-glass-window game. It's 10 rounds. You roll X number of dice. I think it's 2N plus 1, where N's the number of players. Darn it. So 5 and 2 players, 7 and 3 players, 9 and 4 players. Keep it that way. And everybody's going to draft two dice, and you have to place them in your window. So some spaces are, hey, you can place whatever you want. Other spaces are, must be a yellow die, must be a blue die, must be a 1, must be a 6, those kind of things. So you're making lots of choices. And then you can never place a number adjacent to a number or a color adjacent to a color. It sounds super limiting, but eventually you just get a system and it's not a big deal. You may at the end not be able to play a die or two, but for the most part, you won't be missing more than a die or two. So then every game, there's different scoring patterns. You need to have different numbers in every row or different colors in every column or a sum of dice or a set of dice or something like that that you score points for. And then based on the difficulty of the window you select, you get little, like, worker tokens, and you can use those for special abilities that come out each game. So that's where the change-up is. The point scoring's different every time, the extra abilities you can do are different every time, and it definitely makes it really interesting. I could see this being fun. I know they just released a 5- and 6-player expansion. I think that's going to be more enjoyable, having 3, 4, 5, 6. I found it engaging, interesting, understood where people were coming from. But on a BGG scale, to me, it's really a 6, maybe a 6.5. I didn't, like, desire to bring this out when I had 4 people. But would be great to play with my daughter. Would be great to play with my mother-in-law when she comes over. Really simple, straightforward. So it's definitely got that friendly appeal there. Azul, however, was totally up my alley. I think Kathy likes Sagrada better. But, not sure. I'd have to ask her again. So Azul is a tile-laying game or collecting game. And this is from Plan B Games, Sagrada's Floodgate Games. And in Azul, you've got all these different colored tiles, and you're drafting them from factories, and you can take all of one color, and then they go to the factory floor, and you can take all of one color from the factory floor. Sorry, slow down. You can take all of one color, collect them on your board, and everything left over in a factory, which gets placed out each round, goes to the factory floor. Then you can draw from the factory floor. The first player to do that becomes first player the next round, but they're going to lose a victory point for doing it. Then what you're trying to do is collect sets. You either want 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 of the same type. You'll get to move that one over, and you're basically building on a little section and trying to complete adjacent sections because you'll score points for what's adjacent to the tiles you built. So in the first round, you're going to score a little bit less, and you're like building an engine to score points. The game's going to end when somebody completes a row. And then you'll do a final scoring for every vertical row people completed, for every vertical column, for every horizontal row, you'll score bonus points. And if you manage to have a tile of the same color in each of the 5 rows, that'll score 10 points. So it's very mechanical, very like, what's my best option? Love this in 2-player heads up because I can absolutely read what the other player needs. And that take that, I don't mind. I'm going to draft this one, which is not good for me. Specifically to go against you. And I don't mind that there. I want people to do that to me in heads up. In four player, when I'm in last place and somebody does that to me, it's like, what are you doing? That didn't even help you. It hurt me. So that can be frustrating. Eh. So, but here I enjoy that. So I really liked it. Two player, got a chance to play it with Brian, two player. I don't think it clicked as much for him the first time, which is interesting because he's good with that stuff. So I kind of skunked him in that game, but I had a play under my belt there. But I really like this one. So for me, Azul stands above Sagrada, but I'd play either basically any time. You know me, I love all games. But I really liked Sagrada, and my wife said, what happened to you? Like, you used to love dice, and now you don't like dice. I was like, no, I totally like dice. I just like Azul better. I didn't have anything against Sagrada. I'd still play it and whatnot. That's where that was. All right, then Kathy and I dug out Lisboa and played this. We had kind of a day to ourselves, and I said, you got to play Lisboa. And she's like, have I played this before? I was like, you absolutely have. And it was a lot at first, and then by the end of the game, you loved it. And she's like, okay. And so she's like, no, the look definitely is familiar, and you're explaining things to me, but there's a lot going on. Because, you know, this is a Vital Lacerda game, and it's Eagle Griffin. Beautiful production. Came out 2017. It was last year. And, you know, Vital jokes. He says, like, oh, you play a card in Lisboa, and then you do an action, and then you draw a card. But, yeah. So you've got lots of places you could play your cards. Lots of things that happen. So this is a Euro game, but the theme is really strong here. So, and I talked about it previous on the podcast. I played this at Dice Tower Con. I played this since. So I'll just go quick. But Lisboa, Portugal, was decimated in the 1700s by an earthquake and a flood, tsunami even, I believe, or typhoon, and various other things. So they've got fire in the city, water in the city, and rubble in the city. They decide, we're going to rebuild this city better than anything before. So they built it with this blue-inked marble, which, of course, is the whole look of the game, which I'm pretty sure will be up for awards nominated. I think it already was nominated in Golden Geek, and we'll see what happens with Dice Tower Awards. I'll try and make sure it gets in the nominations for sure. So now you're trying to rebuild the city. So the theme is actually pretty strong. You're trying to go to different magistrates to get them to approve things so that you can build in the city or add public works. You want to ship goods so that that keeps happening. You know, you keep having imports and exports and all sorts of different things. So it was pretty much exactly as I described it to Kathy. At first, she was like, wow, there's a lot going on. And then when it clicked, it just clicked. And she's like, wow, she just loved the game. She beat me by like 20 points, which I can tell you here. She beat me 24 points. And we just absolutely love this game. So I really like it at two players. I think I'll totally play it at four. I would imagine it'll be longer, although the decks run out quicker and whatnot. I'm not going to explain everything because I know I talked about it several podcasts ago, probably in the 50s at least or so. So you can check it out there. But really wanted to comment on how much fun that game is. All right, Sunday Split. Got to play Sunday Split with Zephra a whole bunch, also with Kathy and Zephra a bunch. Sunday Split is a game from Renegade, and I believe it is Nate Bivens. Yep. And this is a straight-up I-Split-You-Choose card game. So you got a deck of cards. Based on the number of players, you remove some from the deck, and then you draw X number of cards. So in a three-player game, you draw eight, and you make three piles with three of the cards face down. And so the face down is really where the fun of this comes, because you get to make the three piles, but you also get to make things kind of tempting. So, of course, it's classic to make a pile of three that are all face down. And what you're trying to do is get toppings and ice cream to put in a sundae. So there's chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry scoops. There's whipped cream and sprinkles that go together to score points. There's a cherry on top, which scores for whichever type of ice cream you have the most of. There's bananas to put in there to make your banana split. And then there's corn and broccoli and I want to say celery, but I can't remember what the third thing is, which is a negative because you don't want those on your ice cream. And so you just go through, and basically the way it's set up is in a three-player game, everybody will go twice and get to, you know, do the I split and then go around. Everybody chooses, you get what's left, and you score your points at the end of the game. Really simple, but just that mechanism is so much fun. Zephyr just keeps asking to play this game. She loves this, and Skull, she wants to play all the time. Two-player, which doesn't work two-player. But we've played a bunch. It's awesome. And I mean, 15 minutes max, we can score it. It says 20 on here, but 20 would be long. And it's a good solid little game. Again, like Sagrada, I'd probably rate it down there, you know, maybe be a 6.57. But it's just a fun go-to for an evening. I like to play games that I might rate at that level. I think I've said this before. Even to me, a 5 might be a game I would play. I just would be like, oh, that's what you're dying to play. Below that line, I'm just teaching games to people. I would be like, oh, I'll teach this to you and back out. If I teach you a game and back out, don't assume I don't like the game. Sometimes I just want people to have space. So I'll be in the middle of teaching, so I'll be walking up and be like, come take my spot. And that's fine. Cool. Had some people over, played Roll for the Galaxy, which was excellent. Everybody really enjoyed that game. It's a top-notch game. Trickster Champions of Time is a trick-taking game. This was great. We played with 6, and everybody really got it. The first and the last round, you play 3 rounds, were quick. The second round was kind of slow, but it's a really, really clever trick-taking game. It's quite thinky, but everybody got it, and that made it really fun to play. I think I talked about that in the past. If not, I'll play it again. Maybe I'll talk about it. And then I played Import-Export again. So Import-Export, I had talked about, and it's like Glory to Rome. It's very much Glory to Rome. But after playing several times, I definitely don't think this is as good as Glory to Rome. Sadly, the abilities on the cards are just not nearly as powerful, and that's definitely the fun of Glory to Rome. Like, it stinks when somebody gets a runaway combo and they win. But honestly, if everybody knows Glory to Rome, then the game is like 30, 40 minutes. Who cares? But in Import-Export, the abilities are just like, maybe I would get to use this, or I can try to focus on it, but it's hard to use. And then it just seems to have a rhythm that can't be broken easily. So it's like, I've got to get a boat, and then I've got to get a contract on it. And I want it to have a small number to put good so I can get money, so I can put the boat back out, so I can import it to get the goods off of it and sold to somebody to get money to get it back. And that just seems to be the best rhythm for the game, and it's hard to break it. At least we haven't found it yet. We had issues with Glory to Rome at times, so I'm going to keep playing Import-Export, but just not comparing to Glory to Rome for me at the moment. So there's that. Also played Century Spice Road with Zephyr. I think I posted this on Twitter. And man, it was so close. 59-57. I beat her. But I was so excited that she did so well in that game. She really knew what to do. She got one of the cards that's like 5 yellow cubes, 5 turmeric changes for 2 cinnamon, and she got 10 turmeric and traded all 10 in to get 4 cinnamon. Totally understood that, and I was like, yes, you have got this game. You are now, like, you are thinking strategically. How can I get more bang for my buck? And I was just super proud of her. So she did a really good job, and that was exciting. And I'm sure it won't be long, as many of you who are parents who have kids older than my daughter know, until she is just beating me on a regular basis, and I don't have to go back and think about, like, how did all that go? So that is a whole bunch that I've been playing lately, and everything was very fun. So that was great. And also played several games of Gaia Project. We were teaching a new friend, and we played that like within a week of each other. And that was exciting, too. And they were pretty close three-player games. I think the first one I think I kind of ran away with, and the other one was really close. So still enjoying Gaia Project, as it is my number 2 game of all time. Cool. Let's move on, then. New York Toy Fair. So I went down to New York Toy Fair. It was Monday, President's Day. Kathy came with me. Brian was already there, so we all met up. And I can tell you the overall theme for the New York Toy Fair, which was at the Javits Center, which is on the west side of Manhattan along the Hudson River there. So we took the train down from my parents' house. My parents live in Stratford, Connecticut, and hopped on a train, just took that down. It takes about 90 minutes, and we were at Grand Central Station. And so got there, walked over, and the theme this year, no doubt, was slime, poop, and sequins. This is what was everywhere. So everybody's making things this upcoming year that's going to be slime-related, you know, make-it-yourself slime. Oh, we'll help you have a kit to make slime, and then do things with your slime. Put your slime down and shoot slime at each other, whatever. Poop-themed games, you know, there's the Don't Step In It game, and just pillows that are the little smiley poop, and all sorts of poop-related things. So apparently poop is in. Which we both find kind of weird. I mean, I guess it's kind of funny, but... And then reversible sequins is the other part. So I don't know if you've seen these pillows anywhere, but you can kind of, like, rub the sequins one way and they're pink, and rub them back the other way and they're silver. And there's patches and toys and pillows and purses and all sorts of things with reversible sequins. So there's your toy rundown that you're going to see in 2018, as we saw a lot of new things that were coming out. But it's really exciting. This was Kathy's first time going, my second. Brian's been a bunch. And it's just neat. You walk in and you realize, like, wow, toys are huge and board games are really small. And I think it's good just for us to remember those kind of things. So we walked through. We had a whole bunch of things to do. I know Kathy and Brian got to go and see Lego, which Kathy was really excited because she's a huge Lego fan and got to see all the new things. But she had to sign an NDA, so we can't talk about what was seen. But that was really neat. And Brian just kind of tasked us with, like, find other stuff that would be fun for us to carry in the store. And so we all kind of parted ways and went and looked through toys and whatnot. I'm not going to bore you with all the toy details because I know people listening to this are interested in games. So that's where I focus most of my time because that's, that's my main thing. But it was neat. It's just neat to go there and see all the different things and whatnot. One of the things that was really cool was Mad Matter, which they have that kinetic sand, if you've ever seen that. They now have this, like, kinetic dough, so it's almost like Play-Doh that never dries out. And you can play with it, but it can really get pretty hard, so you can make it into, like, bricks. So we won't say Legos, but you know what I'm saying? And you can do things with the bricks and build with the bricks, and that was really cool. There was also this Offbits, which was a guy from Israel, and he was making little kits. They're like kid erector sets is the best way I would go with that. And it came with a little tool, and you can build, and you're using nuts and bolts and screws and special plastic pieces they made to make little robots. And every kit can make like four or five, maybe three or four different things, which is really neat. So there's options to, like, take it apart and put it together, which is great. He was saying, like, for some young kids, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old, the first time they're ever working with screws or bolts or any of those things. So just to give you a taste of some of the things that were there, that was really neat. So while I was there, I talked to a lot of companies. I'll just highlight some. So Calliope Games was there. Saw Daryl Andrews and Chris Leader, who were both hanging out in the Calliope booth, getting ready for City of Gears to launch, which is through Gray Fox Games. But they were there, so I said hi to them and saw all the stuff from Calliope, Ancestry from Eric Lang, and Capital City from James Ernest, and a variety of others that I'm not going to remember off the top of my head, were there. But that's, you know, definitely that family weight. They say they want games to be under $30 and, you know, 30 to 60 minutes, and that's what they're really looking for in their line. So they were great to talk to. That was exciting. Saw Breaking Games. They had a whole lineup of tables and different things. They re-released Asking for Troubles. They had Rise of Tribes out, which really looks exciting. Looks like a really good game. So definitely want to check that out. A bunch of other that they always have there, and was able to see them. Saw Ice Cool 2. So Ice Cool 2 is going to attach to your Ice Cool 1, and it basically builds another half, and then in the middle there's like a sliding tray. So that middle room can slide back and forth, so you can get from one side of the school to the other really quickly. As well as they made like a racing game that you can play with the box. The double box. And then they had another game called Pyramid of the Penguins, which was really cool. It's like one side is the mummy, and I think nobody can... The mummy? I can't remember how it worked. But one side is the penguin players, and one side is the mummy. It's like hidden movement. So you're moving like magnetically on this temple, and people can see one side but not the other. Anyway, it was a cool game, Pyramid of the Penguins. Saw that there. Went to Blue Orange and saw Pool Party. This looks like it's going to be a really good party game that's coming out from them. It's almost like a pool on a spring. So you've got like a tub on a spring, and then you've got these little frogs that you've got to flick up into that, but it moves all around. So it's just kind of a light dexterity game. Probably could be really, really frustrating, but it was definitely a lot of fun and interesting there. Stopped by Gale Force 9, saw the new Aliens game. They announced a D&D game with nothing else other than a D&D game because Wizards is holding that license for whatever the new property is. But they said it's going to be really exciting. Firefly, which probably has launched by now or is super close. It's either in our store or really close. The Firefly Adventures game. And then a ton more for Star Trek Ascendancy and for Doctor Who. They're going to have all the Doctors out this year. and who were they releasing in Star Trek? I want to say Vulcans and I'm a terrible Trekkie. I can picture them. They're blue. They're on the planet nearby. Anyway, I can't remember. You're yelling at me right now because I should know. But those are all coming out. Saw Dinosaur Tea Party from Restoration Games. So I just think that's a great name. The cover is awesome. All these dinosaurs sitting down drinking tea. And I think it's like a light family bluffing game or something. Fireball Island cover was out. And it's really cool in a big old box. So that was neat. Prelude for Terraforming Mars. These are all boxes that were there. Other things. Went to a meeting with Yellow, and we got to see a bunch. So Fairy Tile is a new game that is coming out from them. It's Brett J. Gilbert and the guy who always works with Brett J. Gilbert, and I never remember his name, and I feel so bad. They only had it in prototype form, but they're going to have really nice custom minis that are going to be in there, just three of them. Princess, Dragon, and Knight. And you're basically building a story, and you have these tiles out on the board, and you're going to move them around. The dragon moves a certain way, the knight moves a certain way, and you're trying to complete the steps of your quest to score the most points. So it was definitely lighter than I anticipated, I felt like, but it looked pretty fun and pretty solid. I think that'll be a fun one to play with kids and family and whatnot. Legend of the Cherry Blossom Tree. Wow, the art on this is awesome. I was really excited, and then the box was kind of small, and inside it's really a push your luck game. You're drawing these petaled flowers out. They didn't have any petaled flowers for using Terraforming Mars cubes, but you draw these out and you're trying to collect sets, and then you take certain ones and leave them in front of you and certain ones to put behind, and you're going to score points at the end of the game, and you can press your luck, but if you collect certain things, boom, you bust and you lose your turn. So the game didn't excite me. The art really excited me. The bag is beautiful that's in there. And everything. So kind of iffy on that one, but yeah, the art was gorgeous. And then we saw Raids or Raid with an exclamation point, or Raiders. I believe it was Raids with an exclamation point, but I can't remember off the top of my head. So it's another Brett J. Gilbert, and the guy that works with Brett J. Gilbert. And I can't remember, but this is Yellow's take on a Viking theme game, because hey, we're Vikings. It doesn't have to make sense. And so they're going to have this Viking game, which is very much in the Takedo idea of whoever you can move as far forward as you want, and then whoever's in last moves up. It did seem to have a mechanism of you have to move at least as far as the player in front of you. So if everybody surpasses somebody by a whole bunch, they can't use every space that's behind. So that was kind of interesting. And then you're stopping and you're collecting supplies and you're raiding villages and you're attacking each other, and you've got a longboat and you can attack each other's boats. In kind of like a bidding mechanism, so it's very Euro-y in that sense. Looks pretty exciting, though. That was the best of the three to me in terms of meat and weight. Fairy Tile was probably in terms of look and gameplay. So that was that. And then finally, we got to play Get the MacGuffin. So this was at Looney Labs. And, of course, Looney Labs is famous for Flux. Of all of their games and all the different Flux. And Flux is fun, and Flux is all over the map, and Flux can be too long, and Flux can be too short. But at the end of the day, you know, they've definitely got something there with Flux. But Get the MacGuffin was really good. It's still like Flux. It's 23 cards. They were claiming, you know, you can play this like standing up in line at a convention because you put cards in front of you on the table, but all you have to do is spin them backwards in your hand so everybody can see them, and you now have that card. But it's way faster Flux. This is Flux in 5 to 10 minutes, and I think that's the beauty of it. I don't know, maybe this will get old, but we're going to try to have a bunch of these pre-Tabletop Day, as well as I'm going to try to teach it a whole bunch at Tabletop Day, because it's really fun. So in Get the MacGuffin, you're trying to be the last person holding cards. If you're the last person holding cards, then you win. The MacGuffin is an item you can put on the table, and it says if this is the only thing you have no cards, then on your turn you can put it back in your hand and play it. So you basically have infinite turns if you have the MacGuffin. And then there's just all sorts of crazy Flux-esque cards. Swap things with people, steal things from people, make people trade, take another turn, which I guess you don't want to do, and various other things. There's a series of discarded cards you can work with, and it just gets really crazy and silly, but it's over in 5 and 10 minutes. And so whereas Flux can confuse people and the math gets out of control and now we're drawing 6 and playing 7, and all our keepers are -1. Whereas I think that stuff's great and it's funny, but it gets old after a while. this one just seemed to play really quick and exciting. So we really had a lot of fun with Get the MacGuffin, talked to them for a while about other games and things. I really have to try to play Pyramid Arcade because that looks really exciting, and I think we have a copy at the store. So I'm going to do that. And yeah, so that was New York Toy Fair for the most part. We obviously spent a lot of time looking at toy companies and other things to help out. I did go by the Asmodee booth, and that wasn't really exciting. They had, you know, Legion out with some models, but nothing that we really haven't seen other places and whatnot. So yeah, that was my day at New York Toy Fair. Okay, so last up for this episode, I want to talk about Conclave 2018. So Conclave is a board game invite-only convention in Danbury, Connecticut. And it's co-run by Cardboard Jungle. So that's Anthony, Paul, Matt, and Kevin, who are all on there. As well as, I forgot the name of their new podcast, but they used to be Not Just Another Gaming Podcast, which I know is Michael and Jim, and I know there's somebody else on there and I don't remember, but Jim is the one I interact with most at Conclave. So anyway, Anthony invited me down for the day, and so I went down there and got to play a bunch with them. So they're just holding this in a hotel. You stay overnight in the hotel, and you go down. They got a room. There was a ton of games. I walked in. There was just one group playing. I got there kind of early in the morning, and people were kind of making their way down. And they had a lot of stuff. It was interesting. They had a lot of titles that weren't like quite yet released, which was fun, or that were hard to get, like a Gentes or Gentes, I think is what Matt said it should be pronounced. It's like Gentlemen or All the People, I guess is what that is, which I didn't get a chance to play and whatnot. But yeah, it was a nice space, easy access to some bathrooms there. They had the hotel bringing in just like water for people and just lots of good tables. They had circular tables and rectangular tables, and you just go to town and you play games, and that's really what it was all about. And so that's what I did. I played five games there. So we'll go through them. So the first is I taught Diluvia Project to the guys from Cardboard Jungle there, except Kevin, he was not there because I believe Kevin lives in Michigan. So that wasn't going to work for him. And so we played Diluvia Project. This is a Spielworks game, I believe from 2015. And Diluvia Project, you are building the world's first floating island. So they built an island that floats in the sky, Sky Island, and you are building up buildings and trying to attract people there. So at the end of the game, population is king. Whoever has attracted the most people to their sector of the city will win. So this is like a multi-economic game. So you've got prestige, population, money, and resources all happening. You got a board in front of you that's showing an even building count. You got a board in front of you that's showing what your like end of turn rate is. So how much prestige do I generate? How much how many resources do I generate? How much money, etc. And then you can score during the game. The game itself is basically three phases. So the first phase is like a market phase, and you lay out all these tiles, and then you play zeppelins, and you claim rows or columns, and you buy the tiles, 1, 2, 3, and 4 coins going down the row or column. If somebody buys something prior to you, you get a coin, which are called arrows in this game, because of the flight thing. And you get these bonus upgrade tiles or resources or whatever it is. Then you go, and it's a worker placement game. It's a very non-tight worker placement game. Some of the spaces even say, like, only red can go here, only blue, green, or yellow. So you just have a spot reserved for you. What's interesting, though, is you can stack multiple on a space and then be able to do that action multiple times. And then everybody has a special worker that if they use them there, you get a bonus. So you get a bonus ability if you're the first one to do that. So that's the part that's interesting in the worker placement. It's not the people blocking you out. Towards the end of the game, the buildings tends to run out of spaces. So there is that one. And so you're claiming spaces on the map, and you're collecting resources and getting coins and building buildings. When you build buildings, they generate those abilities, more resources and more money and whatnot. So what's really happening is you're getting prestige, and as you get prestige, every 10 prestige is going to score population. Oh, I heard about that section of the city. And whatever number of buildings you built is going to determine how much population you gain. So you want to kind of like balance this prestige generation with building buildings so that there's a higher amount of population for each. So I really went for the, like, let's generate a lot of prestige. And on that track, I blew everybody away. But my population was a little bit lower throughout. So I ended up winning just by 1 point, I believe. But that was kind of what happened. So it took us about 3 hours, 3.5 hours with explanation, but definitely felt like, boy, we know it. It would cut down to two. There's some graphical things that were a little tricky and whatnot. But we were really excited at the end of the game. It was 57, 56, 54, 48. And that was really cool. It feels very, like, scaled back. You're scoring for all these things, but eventually it just becomes that population that's your score. And that was really cool. So that was a really fun game. I really enjoyed Diluvia Project. I think I'd only played it with Kathy prior. That was neat. So there is that. Next up, I got to play Kalimala. So this is a game from ACD Blackfire. And I don't think it's available for anybody in the States. So waiting to see a publisher on this one. So this was one that came from Essen. And this is a fun game. This was like a gamer's Century Spice Road to me, in that the mechanisms are really simple, but the decisions are where it's tough. So try to explain this. Basically, at the start of the game, you lay out 9 tiles in a 3x3 grid, and these are your action tiles. And you're going to place a disc in between them, so they're spaced. So you're going to place discs that you have in between the tiles and get to do the 2 actions. So you may have silk and brick. And so you gain a silk and a brick, and everything's just cubes of your color, and you have a little board, and you just mark, I now have one. So you don't actually have the resources anywhere. And the other actions are like you could build. So I could build a ship. So now if I build a ship and I take the shipping action, I can send silk to a port town in, you know, Europe or whatever. So the towns were all named after Euro games, which are, of course, in turn, named after cities in Europe. So you have Troyes, and you have Lisboa, and you have London, etc. You can also build a cart, and a cart allows you to build to the cities that are inland, that are not on ports. And then there are 4 churches, and you can donate to the churches. The churches want the various resources, brick and marble. They want you to build a statue out of marble there. Wood, I believe, is the other one. And you donate. And it all becomes area control. And there's various scoring phases. So now, that's interesting. But where the game really becomes interesting is I can now place my disc on top of somebody else's disc. I take both actions. And then they take both actions. And then somebody could place their disc on top of mine, which is on top of somebody else's. And now we all take those 2 actions. Or I can stack my disc on top of my own to take the actions each twice. Once a 4th disc gets stacked, the bottom disc gets kicked out. It doesn't get to do the action, and it goes to the 15 scoring tiles on top, which are random every game, and it tells us what's going to score. Troyes is going to score. Then most statues is going to score. Then this church is going to score. So you've got to pay attention to what's going to score when, and there's little points. There's like 3, 2, 1 for who's in 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in terms of number of things. Definitely the complexity in terms of figuring things out really jumps up when it comes to breaking ties. The tie breaking is where it gets a little bit tricky. And there's a whole series of tiebreakers because very often people have 2 cubes in a region and you've got to run through the tiebreakers. So that got a little bit crazy. So that's basically it. And you just go till everybody's discs are out. You also have 2 white discs that trigger double actions. So I can do each action twice if I use the white disc. But when somebody plays on top of a white disc, it doesn't retain my color. So I don't get to do future actions after that. That's where this game goes. So it's all in that like decision making. Each action is very simple. The area control and the scoring is a little bit complex to wrap your head around. And then everybody gets a secret scoring card. So if I think I had Troyes in the game. So Troyes is going to be 5-3-1 at the end of the game. So I'm really pushing for that to get those points. And you can try to guess what other people have. That was Kalimala. It was really fun. I really enjoyed it. I probably would have just set up and played again if people wanted to. And it was pretty quick. We played in like 45 minutes. So that was interesting. Kalimala, ADC Blackfire. We were then looking for a 5-player game. A lot of Euros at this. And so somebody said, oh, Transatlantic would be fun. I was like, oh, it's 4, but Concordia is 5. I'm like, oh, we have Concordia. So we pulled out Concordia. And it was awesome. Got to play Concordia. It's just such a great game. Everybody scored over 100 points, so it ranged from 100 to 125 points. And it's just a great game, and you should play it, as well as Navigador. those are the two best Matt Gaetz games. Then the one and only Eric Sommer showed up with his curling board and his son and played a couple games with him and some other people. So I got to play cockroach poker for the first time. Cockroach poker has nothing to do with poker and very little to do with cockroaches. But there are cockroaches in the game. So just a very silly bluffing game. I pass a card to you and I say, this is a spider. And you can either say, it is a spider and look at it, or I don't believe you. You flip the card. If you're correct, then the other player gets it back. It's a point against them. You don't want points. If you're wrong, you get the card. Or you can just look at the card and pass it to somebody else and say, oh, they were right. It is a spider. Or no, it's a toad. And you just keep going around. Once it goes all the way around the table, the last person has to make a decision. And what you're trying not to do is get three of a kind. If you get three of the same species or insect or whatever, then you lose and you're out. And the game just seems stupid at first, and it's all metagame, and it's like, okay, I just handed you a card, now I'm handing you a card again. Will you believe me? Will you pass it on? It always seems like the smartest thing is to look and pass it on, but there's times you just want to call somebody's bluff. And we were definitely laughing a lot, which is the point of the game. So that was pretty fun. Got to do that. Then I said to Eric, hey, I'd love to play something with you. So he had Pandemic Rising Tide, which obviously he's a huge Pandemic fan, and said Rising Tide was really fun. So we pulled this out and played it. So Pandemic Rising Tide from Z-Man Games, and it's Matt Leacock and Jeroen from Splatter, who designed this game together. And this is the Netherlands. And the Netherlands, I don't know the whole history, which is a little sad. I wish I did. But basically, it's, you know, really along the coast there, kind of north of France and northwest of Germany, along the ocean there. And so they have a lot of issues with flooding. And so this goes back into, I believe, the 1800s, maybe the 1700s, or I don't know, apologies. And you have a whole bunch of dikes on the board. And so dikes are kind of your protection, and water is your disease in this game. You're trying not to get regions to have too much water in them. And basically what happens is you have a set of water cubes, and if they run out, then you lose the game. So you're trying to stay close there. And storms are going to be your epidemic. So if there's a storm, it's going to cause even more flooding. So you draw a region, and if there's a dike there, you remove the dike. Otherwise, you add a water cube to that region. And then there's this whole flooding mechanism. So basically, you look at every region that has three cubes of water, and every region adjacent to it goes up to two cubes. You don't add two cubes. You just make it so that they are now at two cubes. Then you look at all the two-cube regions, and everything adjacent to them gets one cube. There are a lot of dikes on the board. That's important. And one of your actions is you can just build a dike. However, you can only build one if a region has no water. What else is new? Your goal is to construct four special constructions. So there's a dam, there's a pump, there's a water system, and I don't remember the other thing that you can build. And you're trying to construct these by discarding five cards of the same color, going to that spot, and building it there. And then you get a bonus. So like one of them is, hey, you get to remove eight water cubes from this region, which is huge, but it's the region that usually gets the least water. So you finally just kind of remove those. Then there are ports, so you can build a port, and you can always go back to a port. So there's so many rivers and water and all sorts of things, you can always get back to a port in this game. So an action is just to go back there. So that makes it really fast to transport. And then finally there are pumps, and pumps are super important. So you put a pump down, and you can remove any one water that's connected to that pump. So connected just means you can trace a line of water cubes. So that becomes vitally important to get as many pumps, and it'll remove at the end of everybody's turn. So we end up having four pumps out, and you can remove four cubes at the end of everybody's turn, which you can tell is going to be huge. So we went through. It definitely puts you in a tight spot. You have a region where you're like, ah, we really got to go work on that. Eric played the carpenter, so he could build dikes even in regions that had no water, and he could build a pump without discarding any cards. That was very powerful. I don't remember the name of mine, but I could pass cards to anybody from a port. So we had a pretty good combo with these. It was really just random selection. We went through. What was interesting here is I feel like Pandemic kind of starts out and you're like, okay, we've got these couple problems, and then we figure them out, and then it ramps up and you get past that difficulty and you just kind of cruise to the end. But this really went up and down. I kept looking and saying, like, okay, this is it. If we get through this, we should be okay. But there'd be another hump. Maybe not quite as big as that kind of initial third of the way through the game one. But it kept going that way. What was humorous during the game was it seemed like I drew the storm cards. I believe we put 7 in the deck. I think easy is 6, medium is 7, and hard is 8. There's also some other modifications you can make to make the game harder. I said, let's go with 7. I think I drew 5 out of the 6 storm cards. And every time those that lovely voice of Eric Summers would say, way to go, Brant. And it became very humorous that it just kept being my fault and kept drawing all those storm cards. But it was very fun. And in the end, we did win. We did manage to save the Netherlands from all the flooding and whatnot. And I really enjoyed Rising Tide. I really enjoyed Pandemic overall. Base Pandemic teaching to people is kind of one of those games at this point. I'd rather there's 4 people and I teach them and they just go and play. And it definitely can have that alpha player. I just never do that. I tend to say, you think that's a good move? Let's do it if I'm playing with people. Obviously, Legacy is just totally where it's at. That's very fun. But these other versions, I still haven't played Iberia. So I need to do that. I wasn't a huge fan of Cthulhu, but Rising Tide was awesome. Yeah. And, of course, the survival I've talked about way, way long ago in the past, doing that at Gen Con. But that's super fun. So, 2 thumbs up for Pandemic Rising Tide. And then it was time for me to leave for the day. So, that was my experience at Conclave. Really fun. Really want to go back to that next year. Hoping some of those people will come out to International Tabletop Day. So, there you go. There's a whole bunch of games, and some Toy Fair stuff as well. That's what's been happening, but I think I will wrap up episode 79. I will answer the question, what if he doesn't survive? But I did survive! I made it to the end, so that was exciting. So, we keep going from there. So, I think that's it. I am your host, The Brant, and until next episode, we hope you step into the portal. Portal Game Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on February 28, 2018. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Thanks for listening.